This is the last thing I saw. I'm very honored to be speaking with Bertrand Bonello, the director of The Beast, which is a film that more or less fried my brain when I saw it for the first time in Venice, in a good way. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for inviting me to this conversation.
I'd like to start with a question that I hope isn't too fundamental about the film. You know, for people who don't know, it takes place over three different time periods, sort of weaves them together. We have 1910, I guess Belle Epoque era, 2014, pre-Trump, 2044, sort of next generation, but very much changed already. So the basic question is, why tackle three different time periods?
One of the idea of the film was to mix many genres and many periods, you know. So how did I choose them? I'm very fascinated by the beginning of the century, the enter in the 20th century, you know, because people at that time, they enter with a lot of light, you know, thinking that the 20th century would be like without war, without disease, with a lot of hope. We're in 1910, and 4 years after, it's like darkness, you know, and this century has been one of the most terrible of history, maybe with when we are living now. But I really like this moment because there's so much hope and idea of progress, and the idea of having like an intimate catastrophe at that moment is very romantic in a way.
Yeah.
2014, I mean, I was looking for something close from us with the idea of fear and love, like in the whole movie. And I was thinking about what is it in the contemporary world. And I thought about the incels, because Louis, George MacKay is an incel in 2014. So he says, basically, no woman wants me, so I hate them, so I'm going to kill them. But for me, it was a way to also say that he's himself afraid of love, you know? And it's a very contemporary function of that. So I had in mind all the videos of Elliot Rodger, like that appeared in 2014, and I set the film in 2014 for this reason. But you're right to say it's pre-Trump, it's pre-Me Too, it's, you know, it's a particular period. 2044, I wanted to set something in the future, but a very close future. I want it to be tomorrow in a way. Something we can, you know, figure out, touch from the finger, you know. It's more scary if you say that you live this future, you know. And science fiction, which I've never done before, I realized that you're inventing concepts, you're inventing a world. And with that, you're just talking about your fear of today. And 2044, it's just an expression of my fear of today.
So in the movie, you know, Léa Seydoux and George MacKay cross paths in each of these time periods. And what was curious to me watching it, thinking about everything you're saying, is that sometimes when you have a film that's about several time periods and people meet each other, I mean, I guess they're not that many, but sometimes it's about like the eternity of love or something. But in this case, it seems to be, I don't know, about the continuity of dread. None of these time periods are a refuge really in any way.
No, exactly. I mean, you could say that each period has its own catastrophe. They're different, you know. The present of the film is 2044, and they go back in the past to relive what they've lived before. The past could be a kind of refuge, because the present, even if it's said that there's no more catastrophe, that's the worst catastrophe. It's something very, so much loneliness and so much, you know. So the past becomes a kind of refugee with its problems and its own catastrophe. And I really like this idea of, you know, it's always the same and never the same, you know. The characters, finally, they're all the same, but the periods are so different. They are different because of the period, you know. Mm-hmm. And I really like this kind of continuity and discontinuity.
Yeah. I was looking at an interview and reading an interview that melodrama was a big attraction of the Henry James story for doing it. So I was wondering how you define melodrama, and also if part of melodrama is maybe a sense of excess, of like too muchness in a way, because I mean, it's unavoidable that a movie about this many time periods and, you know, this span of events, there's a certain amount of excess there.
Yeah, I really agree with that. It's when it's too much, you know. For example, if you take Douglas Sirk's film, at what point it becomes too much? But it's this too much that becomes so heartbreaking, you know. It's out of reality. It's something, you know, no, you cannot do that. Yes, I will do it. And This is where you start to cry. But for me, melodrama is when you have like two people, everybody in the audience knows they are made to be together, to love each other, except them. And when they realize, it's too late. The melodrama for me is the too late.
And these are particularly tragic, melodramatic situations. I mean, when I was just thinking, like, what are the obstacles in each time period? And it's not just, say, separation. I mean, it's partly, marriage in the period drama part. But if I think about it, it's like, I don't want to give away the first part, but there's death, there's disaster. And then in the 2014, it's kind of psychosis. And then in the third one, it's dehumanization. These are sort of very unromantic sources of separation.
Yeah, there is a kind of history of feelings, in the film. In 1910, they really expressed their, you tell about feelings. There are a lot of talking about that. In 2014, it's like repressed, And even the way George is talking to his iPhone, it's repressed feelings. And you have her with a computer, him with his iPhone, they're very connected, but they're so lonely. And this is like a sign of the period. And in 2044, they're just suppressed, no more feelings. So there's a kind of history of that. And two people crossing this history of feelings.
Yeah. Thinking about the 2044 period, I mean, I don't know how to ask this, but this idea of purging trauma or somehow cleansing oneself of trauma that the AI thinks is, how you deal with being a human being. How did you come to this idea? What led you to this idea?
Well, I was trying to find concepts that would help me to tell my story. And there are two concepts in 2044. One of them is that humanity has failed and AI took the power, So in a way, problems are solved, but you have a price to pay. It's this kind of empty world. And the second one, which is really the one that helps me for my character, is you have Gabrielle facing a dilemma. Either she can have an interesting work, either she can have feelings. It's a horrible dilemma, but it's the principle of dilemmas to be horrible, And they're great for dramas, they're great for characters, for stories. So that's why I came up with these two concepts.
I mean, it's such a haunting idea because, in a way, I mean, not to generalize, but like, in a way, we're in a time period where we're trying to do better with dealing with traumas that are faced by a lot of people. And then instead, here, the solution that the machine come up with is just get rid of it.
Yeah, it gives up at one question. What is progress, And that comes back to something that I think a lot, the relationship between technology and humanity. Yes, there are some progress in a way, but in another way, it's getting very dangerous. Technology is like it's a tool, So humanity, people has to be the master of the tool, If the technology becomes the master of humanity, it's the end of the world in a way, And they are talking about progress. So what do you do with a tool? If you have a hammer, you can, put something on the wall, a nice picture, but you can also kill someone. It's just a tool,
Have you used or just experimented with ChatGPT, for example?
course I have. It's like, it's crazy. I asked, for example, could you write me a script like Bertrand Bonello, And in 5 seconds, you just have like 5 pages with a story, me, it takes me 5 months, And I don't say it's bad, It's just I won't make this film, but I have the 5 pages. So yes, it is scary in a way because now it's just like technical, he has all the datas and stuff like that, but there is of course lacks of sensibility, of poetry, of mistakes. But you can introduce mistakes in technology, That's the next step to make it more human.
I have to ask, what was the story that it came up with?
Well, my film wasn't out yet, but it was basically something that goes through ages and periods stuff, and he took like all my nine films, and made a mix of that, and it was not so far from the Beast.
Well, I mean, I have been thinking a lot about your films, and I guess one thing that keeps happening is I'm always surprised, and I was reading a piece of criticism, I guess it was around the time of Nocturama, where it said that you one feature you have is that you lack a sense of sometimes self-censorship in a good way. Like you'll go someplace that maybe we're not ready to go. And that's something I really felt with this film.
Well, the first person I try to surprise is myself, because that's why it's getting more and more difficult for me to make film, because it's my 10th, and you always try to do something you've never done before and to go deeper and deeper. So I know for some directors, it's getting more and more easy because they know how to do. Me, it's the more I advance, the less I know how to do, But I like that. It's just painful sometimes, but I like this way of thinking. So I'm trying to surprise myself first, and then I guess I hope the audience.
I was really intrigued about how you said that George MacKay and Léa Seydoux have different methods of approaching what they do. He's kind of more goes toward more longer preparation, and she's more in the moment. I mean, everyone draws on all sorts of things, but is there a scene you can point to where we can talk a bit about that?
Yeah, you cannot imagine like two different actors that much, But basically, all the scenes where they are together, because he knows exactly what he's looking for, how to do the things, what he's searching, and she doesn't know at all. But it was very generous because he understood, George understood that it was not like because she's lazy, it's just her way to give the best, So it was a great partner, to use that, and to provoke her, to push her. And he told me something very nice at the beginning of the shoots. I said, George, I know Leah, it's my third film with her, and she's really particular in the way she works. And said, I explained to him, and he said, well, that's okay. I'm here to help her, which is the most beautiful sentence an actor can say to another one, or to a director. From that sentence, I knew that they would play together, they will act together, even if they do not have the same method.
Yeah. I mean, his role has his own particular challenges because he's not playing, like models of society always. So, how did you talk with him about that? Because, I mean, you don't need to make a character always sympathetic, but understandably, there is that urge to connect in some way.
Well, I guess he has, like, in a way, three characters, even if it's only one, because one of the challenges of the film was not to make three films but one, and not three characters but one. But let's say he has three characters. Of course, the most challenging for him was, in 1910, the challenge was that he had to speak in French, which is, language he didn't know. He learned for the film. But in 2014, it's very difficult to start with these videos that the audience don't reject you, to have a kind of empathy with a character, though the words he says are just terrible, the words of a psychopath. So that was, the thing we were talking about before the shoot a lot by email. And I always told him, yeah, think of you as a lost boy, much more than evil. And when I saw him doing this part, we did the videos at the end. But for the rest of the scenes in 2014, I could feel this lost boy right away. He had it. He knew how to do that.
I somehow this movie keeps pulling me back to ideas. And what I love is that you have ideas about history in the film and about contemporary life that sometimes are kind of satire and sometimes they're just these sobering ideas. For example, the clubs in 2044 that are themed for particular years. On the one hand, that felt like I don't know if you've read this book called Retromania.
You know what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. This for me was like, yes, things are just in containers, and that's it's like about the commodification of pop, but it was also kind of funny for me.
Yeah. It's there's not a lot of funny stuff in the film, but this is part of it. But the present of the film, that's to say the future, is so cold and empty. I decided to add a kind of free zone, in which everything can happen. You can do in this place stuff you cannot do outside. So I chose clubs because I really like filming clubs, and there is something very strong in the act of dancing, and very. And I thought that okay, the present is very empty, so the past is a refuge. So in the club, one day it's only 1972, one day it's 1980, and like refugees of the past, yeah.
But it also feels sort of clean. The world doesn't feel as unified, which is also a little chilling.
Yeah, it's like a game, Yeah.
Yeah.
You go to the club, you don't know what year it's going to be, but you dress in like that, or you listen to that music, or. Yeah, it's like a game, yeah.
Yeah. So going way back, you began in music. And I was reading somewhere that Stranger Than Paradise was a sort of a big movie for you, but also because it really hit you how it was like music in a way. So I was wondering, how would you describe The Beast as a kind of music? Like, what music would it be, or?
Good question. Good question. There is a lot of talking about music in The Beast, and they talk about Schoenberg as something primitive, not an intellectual thinking, but a physical thinking. And yeah, I a physical music.
Yeah, the movie did actually make me understand Schoenberg in a couple new ways. So yeah, I definitely see how that would be part of it. I mean, I also wonder, because dread and doom is so much a part of this movie. I mean, is this something that you yourself are just sort of feeling more and more? Because I definitely do. I don't know. When I saw your 2044, I was like, yep, that's what's gonna happen, you know?
I started to write the film a long time ago because I stopped a couple of times to make other films and stuff like that. And when the film was shown for the first time, like in September in Venice and Toronto, and for me, it was quite a surprise that the film was more contemporary than I thought. For me, it was something like more in the future and stuff like that. But it's not only because of AI that we talked a lot last year, but just general feeling, a general sensation, general loneliness, and relationship with catastrophe, which is everywhere. And yeah, it made me the film more contemporary than I thought.
Yeah, it's interesting to think of it in relation to Coma as well. I mean, Coma for me was like the strongest film, not about the pandemic, but it captured something about, speaking of like isolation or solitude.
Fear of the future. In Roma, like the main character, she's 18, and I like that because they are like towards future, and what it is, I don't know.
That film's going to come out in the States eventually, right?
Quite soon, yes.
Oh, good. I also wanted to ask a couple of things that I guess come up in your work. In this film you have dolls and masks, have been in previous films of yours, and I'm curious what it is about the blankness of those figures and shapes that appeal to you. Is it like a blank canvas?
I guess part of the answer is in the question. It's really what you say, it's blankness. If you film like someone with a mask or a doll's face, and there is something very mysterious, you don't know what's behind that, And if in this kind of mystery, you can fill it with so many things, and it's getting scary. Dolls, for example, I mean, they are always attached to childhood and stuff like that, but also to horror films, And I think it's really crazy to buy dolls for, young girls or stuff like that. It's fucking freaky. It's just, come on. But I like to shoot them also for this reason. One of my favorite scene in The Beast is when Léa Seydoux is doing the doll, in the Salon de Thé. Because everything stops in her face. And like for a couple of seconds, you say, wow, she's very pretty. It's a nice doll. And like 2 seconds later, she's getting freaky because you do not know what she's thinking of.
Yeah, that is a very intense scene, and I was trying to figure out, what it is. Yeah, it's creepy, but I mean, not to make it like a psychological thing, but I guess there's something about the sudden disconnect,
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's the best word.
which I don't know if that goes back to Freud or something, but there's just something about where you have this sudden, closure from a person, that you think you have some connection with. And I wanted to ask about Henry James. I find his books, I don't know how they are in do you read them in English or in French or both?
In fact, I have bilingual editions,
Oh, cool.
which is very great because I try English, and when it gets like a little tricky, I go back to French. But I have the original text on the left pages.
Because there's something about his work. This one somehow was different.
It's one of the latest novellas, end of his life and stuff like that. But for me, he's one of the most amazing person to understand human soul and to write about it, and to be at the same time at the heart of human feelings, and to put some mysteries in that, and to put some sometimes, yes, fantastic stories in that, relationship with death and life, dead and alive people. And his writing is at the same time very, very precise, and at the same time, it leaves a lot of space.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I think that might bring us to the conclusion. And usually, what I ask on the podcast is, what was the last thing you saw, whether that was in a cinema, on a plane, in a laptop, wherever?
The last film I saw was a short movie done by a young French director called Virgile Vernier about a daughter of a very rich Russian guy lost alone in Monaco and filming everything with her iPhone. It's a great film about loneliness.
Wow, I'll have to track that down. Is that the same director who did Les Mercurials?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that film. All right. I had a whimsical question whether you like the film La Bête by Valerian Borovchik.
Oh my God, I've seen that like 30 years ago. I don't have a great memory of that film, but
Yeah.
I remember I found it fun, but
Yeah.
yeah.
It's kind of insane. Thank you so much for speaking. It's a great film.
Thanks a lot, Nicholas. Thank you.
You've been listening to The Last Thing I Saw with host Nicholas Rapold. You can support the podcast by signing up at rapold.substack.com. Thank you for listening.